First off, I wish all of you a pleasant afternoon. My name is Gary Wagner, and for the next couple of hours, we're going to be talking about a technique in technical analysis which predates our Western counterpart. Let me first start by telling you a little bit about the history of myself, how I began, and what got me interested in Japanese candlesticks. Now, when I began charting the market, and this is back in the mid-80s, 82, 83, and 1984, the interesting thing is very, very few people were using computer-based applications. As a matter of fact, what I would do is I would chart by hand. So I would use a pencil rather than a computer keyboard, and I also would use my mind's eye to draw a trend line rather than using a point-to-point to illustrate a trend channel. What happened was that during the mid-80s, there was a proliferation of commercially available computer programs that now allow traders such as yourself and myself to go on power to have the same tools as our counterparts, the institutional traders. Prior to the mid-80s, what we witnessed was that the large institutional houses were hiring programmers, and these programmers were being paid lots of money to program proprietary information. What happened was, in the early 80s and the mid-80s, technical analytical software packages became accessible to traders such as yourself and myself, such as CompuTrack, Metastock, System Writers, which became Supercharts, and there was an incredible proliferation of the ability for one to analyze markets technically through a very advanced medium. The reason that I bring that up is because it is through this very advanced technical approach that I was first introduced to a very, very ancient form of charting. Now, the type of charting and pattern recognition that we will be discussing today to the Western trader is called candlesticks. It's simply called candlesticks because it is that formation or that look that we see. In other words, in a candlestick itself, as you'll see on our next illustration, that the Westerner was able to say, well, this looks like a candlestick to me. The actual term in Japan or Japanese is a nashikahabi. Now, a nashikahabi actually means footprints. And I find that to be a very interesting metaphor of what we're doing. In other words, as we walk along the sand on a beach, we leave a mark in the sand. And if one wants to follow where someone has gone to, by following those footsteps, we can see where he's ended up. So the Japanese, in their unique way of speaking, labeled this form of technical analysis a nashikahabi, the footprints left by price activity as it moves over time. The beauty of candlesticks, as we'll get into throughout this lecture, is not only is it visually much different, but they have identified patterns which suggest certain market positions and certain market profiles, and more importantly, the essence of a candlestick pattern is the ability to mathematically describe psychological market sentiment. Let's take a second to think about that. As price moves over time, as a captain will take a boat and he will go from point A to point B, of course we know that the most logical way is a straight line. But we know that in reality, markets do not tend to move that way. And to follow that price movement over time, we need to have some sort of a roadmap, some sort of a guide which will tell us what potentially will happen. Now, over three centuries ago, the Japanese began developing this technique. The technique grew out of the need to forecast price change in their rice markets. Now, rice to the Japanese at that point was their single most important commodity. In fact, the samurai warriors were paid not in gold and not in yen. I doubt that they had that form of currency back then, but they were paid in rice. So that rice was incredibly important to them. And obviously a knowledge of where the price of rice would move from one point to the next would be something that would be of great interest and of great benefit to any trader. The Dojima Rice Exchange was one of the earliest rice exchanges. There's one Western Europe exchange that does predate that. In the 1500s, the Dojima Rice Exchange started around 1651. So we are talking about a technical approach which began on a piece of rice paper using a paintbrush that really predates the Western counterpart, the Western technician's bar chart. And I think that that's what I found most fascinating, is that from this highly technical world of computers and technology that we all have access to at this point, I learned about a form of charting that was so very, very old, but most importantly, had just as much relevance in today's markets as it did 200 and 300 years ago. We call this using the power of the dragon. And the reason that we pick that is because the dragon, although is a mythological beast, is something that we feel has power. And the one thing that I would like to impart with you over these next 2 hours is that if we can simply share our enthusiasm for this approach, for this technical approach, so that you on your own can go out and search and find to see if this method properly fits within your trading methodology, then we will have done our job. In 2 hours, there is no possibility that I can expose or express the multitude of what is available in the Nashka hobby, in footprint charts, Japanese candlestick charts. But if I can show you that there is the potential that it will add insight, that you can gain insight, that you can have an understanding of your markets that you had not had prior to this, then I will have done my job. And that is the most important thing that we want to talk about. Now, for those of you who are unfamiliar with candlesticks, we are just going to point out some of the basic differences. Now, on the top, as you can see, we've got three basic bar chart formations. And let me give you a little bit of history as we go into the difference between a candlestick chart and a bar chart. All a chart does in its most simple means is simply show you price movement over time. That's all we're doing. The most simple chart itself is a chart in which on each day when the market closes we draw a single point, a dot. So that if I'm to say that the Dow Jones closed at, and it keeps changing each and every day, it's up above what 6,200 now, 6,266 was yesterday. I don't know where it's at today. Okay, so let's say 6,270. If I say that the market opened at 60 or closed at 6,270 and we were to simply put a point there, and on the following day it rose 10 points, let's say, to 6,280, from point A to point B would represent that price change. Now, if I was to draw a line through that and then draw a line to the next day and the next day, we would have the most simple chart developed by the Western technician, known as a line chart. The line chart was then elaborated on, and the variation became a bar chart. And the bar chart is what we're looking at in the first figure. We've got a simple vertical line. On the bottom of that line, as you can see here, and this is illustration 1i, represents the low of the day. The very top of that vertical line on 1i represents the high of the day. It's the same with 2i and 3i. Now, what the Western technician does is he puts a horizontal line just to the left, just to the left of that, and that represents the opening price of the day. The Western technician will then take another horizontal line starting from the right of the high and low vertical bar, and that will represent the close. So that, as you can see in illustrations 1i, 2i, and 3i, we have three examples of a bar chart. The first example is where the open and close are the same. The second example in 2i is where it opens and then closes above the open. And the third example in 3i is where it opens and closes below the open. Which brings me to a very interesting point, and that is the emphasis which is placed upon relationships in Japanese candlestick charts and relationships placed on a Western bar chart. Let's go back to our example of the Dow. If I say to you, for example, that the Dow closed up 15 points today, I think that what you'll intrinsically see is that I am referring to the price change based upon the close of today, and I am relating it to what? The close of yesterday. In other words, I am putting my major emphasis on the relationship between closing price to closing price to closing price. The Western technician believes that this is what holds the most importance. The Japanese, in their brilliance, realize that the relationship between a close and a close is important, but it's not what is critical. In fact, what they found is critical is not the relationship between the close of yesterday and the close of today, but the open of a current session. Let's call, for example, say we're talking about a daily chart, the opening price of today and the closing price of today. So that when we say that the Dow closed 20 points higher, every Western technician is going to initially draw an inference. And the inference that they're going to draw is we're talking about the close of today versus the close of yesterday. We obviously are placing our major emphasis right upon that point. The Japanese believe something very differently. Their philosophy is that the opening price, the difference between the opening price and the closing price of the prior session is a very important indicator, because that's telling us what news, what has accounted, what has transpired during the evening to make that market change from the closing price to the opening price. But once the market opens, and the fact that all of our markets globally work upon what we call an open outcry system, that each day in the trading pits all around the world, there's a battle. And the battle is between the bulls and the bears. And we can discern, decipher, realize, figure out the outcome of that battle by seeing one of a couple of things. If the market opens and closes higher, we get what we call a empty candle. Now, realize that all we're doing, the only difference between a candlestick chart and a bar chart, is that what we're doing is we are taking and we are drawing a rectangle around the open and closing range. If it opens and closes higher, we're going to leave that empty. That's how we draw that. If the market opens and then closes lower, then be open. We're not discerning about the high and low, what we call the tails or the wicks of a candle. Then we call it a full body candle, as seen in 6i. Now, if the market opens and then closes higher, we call that a white candle. It's sometimes drawn in red, but it's an empty body candle. And what that is significant of is who has dominated the market. In the case of a white candle, as we see here, obviously the bulls dominated the market. If, in fact, we see the market open and then close lower, the bears dominated the market. Now, the interesting thing about candlesticks is when we begin to look at a candlestick chart as opposed to a bar chart, the first thing that happens is that we get a significant visual cue as to what the market's doing. And it's a type of a cue that we simply cannot get by looking at a regular bar chart. I'm going to go a little bit out of order here, and then we'll get back to this chart, but this is just to illustrate this point. And we'll come back to this. This is example 5, and we're going to use this to look at dojis. But what happens is as follows. By placing a body around the candlestick itself, around the open and closing range, what we allow ourselves to do is to create a great visual cue as to what's happening. Now, about a year ago, or 2 years ago, I realized a very, very simple statement that really isolated to me what the possibility of candlesticks are. If a market is moving up, is it fair to say that a definition of an uptrending market is simply a market that has a succession of higher closes as compared to the open, that the market moves higher each day? Is that a fair statement? I hope so. If the market's moving down, it's a succession of lower closes as compared to the open. And so, visually, what we see in a candlestick chart is that when a market is moving up, you are going to get a proliferation or an abundance of white body candles, as you see on chart 5 in this area. In the left-hand side of the screen, you can see 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 cycles or days, because this is the daily chart, in which you have white candles. So before we even go into the pattern recognition portion, the one thing that you can realize is that if a market's moving up and you're looking at a candlestick chart, it's very easy to discern. And the way that we're going to discern it is you're going to see an abundance of white candles. If the market's moving down, it's a succession of lower closes. And so you're going to see almost a consistent trend of black candles, as we see in figure 5. Let's look at this one downtrend, which starts at example A right after this doji. We get 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. 7 black candles in a row. 7 days in which it opened and closed lower. So one easy way to discern trend in a market from a distance as we actually look at the chart is going to see if there is an abundance of white candles or black candles. Now there's a third type of market. The third type of market is what I'll call a consolidating market. It's a market in which has not been able to break out of a trading range either way. And the definition of that is going to simply be a series of alternating candles, as we see at the beginning of figure 5, in which we have black, white, black, 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 white. And what you'll see in some of the charts that we're going to look at in a few seconds is that you will get a proliferation of white candles as the market moves up. As a market moves down, you'll get a proliferation of black candles, and in a consolidating market, that is going to alternate. Now, there's a saying in Japanese, and we're going to begin to cover what we call the Japanese method of three. And that saying is consult the market about the market. In other words, the market will reveal itself. And what we've said is what it means is when observing the market, we've got to pay close attention to market movement itself rather than observing the international affairs, the economic policies, all of the fundamental things that go into why a market moves. And I have to backtrack when I say this, because it is fundamentals which move the market. There's no doubt about it. But I myself am a very simple person. And when I first started charting the markets, I was very, very involved in fundamental analysis. But I had one big problem, and that is I'm quite gullible. And what would happen is I would listen to one economist, and this economist would give me points A, point B, point C, and he'd very, very realistically tell me why pork bellies are going up. He would tell me about stocks and inventory and demand. He would tell me about commercial traders and institutional traders and the farmers hedging. And he would paint a beautiful picture as to why the market was going to go up. And I would walk out of the session and go, this man is correct. He really, really knows his stuff. Pork bellies must be going up. And then a day later, I turn on the news, CNBC. I'd listen to Economist B, and he would tell me the following. Because stocks are going down, and because this is happening, and the commercial players are doing this, and he would paint this gorgeous picture as to why there's a bearish overtone in pork bellies. And old gullible me, I'd go, yeah, I must be right. Fundamental analysis is such that you can paint a pretty picture to either side of the fence. And a gullible person like me is going to listen to it. And what I would do is I would end up thoroughly confused. Here I had one economist telling me the market's going to go up, the other economist telling me the market's going up. They both transmitted very logical reasons as to why that's going to happen. And I didn't have a clue as to what's going to happen, except that maybe I shouldn't trade pork bellies. I was thoroughly confused whenever I would do something like that. That led me to the study of technical analysis. And the reason being is what I found is that numbers and mathematics do not lie. People do, but numbers don't. And so that as I was drawn to the art of technical analysis, I saw that it was something that had a pristine approach. In other words, if the Japanese had the ability to take psychological market sentiment and to distill it or to isolate it into a mathematical formula, and if I had the ability to understand that mathematical formula, I might have the ability to correctly forecast price change. And one of the things that, and this is taken from Seiko Shimizu, and that is that a chart is a recording of price movement in a picture form. And by studying the chart, one is able to identify the path that the market's taken and is able to attempt to predict the future course of market price. The natural laws of price as depicted by the Japanese, and I think you're going to find this very, very fascinating, has been called three-level fluctuation. By just a quick show of hands, how many out here are familiar with Elliott wave analysis? About 50%. For those of you who are familiar with it, what I'm looking at here, does that look like Elliott wave? Predates Elliott wave by over 120 years. The actual patterns, as we're going to begin to disclose right now, is known as the Cicada 5. The Cicada 5 is a series of patterns that were uncovered by the Japanese that relate to price movement over time. The interesting thing is it's been said that the Japanese have an uncanny ability to take our ideas, use their technology, and to come out with a better product, such as in our cars, in their cars. In this case, I have to say the reciprocal must be true, because you had two separate schools, two separate groups of technicians working hundreds of years apart, coming up with the identical theories. What I have found in my research is what I will call a universal truth. And a universal truth, simply put, is that if something is correct, many cultures will see that realization, will come to that conclusion, granted by different means. Now, the natural law of the markets, as put in the Japanese, is a three-level fluctuation. And the method itself teaches us that market prices move in three levels, moving up three levels, then always moving down three levels. And as we said, it greatly corresponds to Elliott wave theory. And there's many unforeseen circumstances that can alter or cause a breakdown in this pattern, such as news items and other things that will change the way the market itself moves. And of course, we need to have some flexibility within that. But the Japanese method of three, or the Sakata five, has a series of patterns that were based upon the number three. And it's an interesting reason why they do even base it on the number three. The number three, when you say it in Japanese, has a translation that means divine. To the Japanese, the number three is very magical. It almost involves mystical power. Whereas the number four, if you say it in Japanese, is analogous to saying death. You will very rarely find a Japanese candlestick pattern which is composed of four. It's almost always composed of three. Now, there are five basic groups of this particular Sakata 5. Now, the one you should see throughout this entire lecture is that many of the things that we're going to discuss, you might say, well, wait a minute. We've got this in our Western technical approach. The Harami, which is something we'll talk about in a few seconds. Most Western technicians are going to go, well, wait a minute, that's an inside trading day. And in fact, you're correct, it is an inside trading day. But the beauty of it is that prior to the Western technician doing any of this work, his Japanese counterpart was doing this 100 years before. Now, the method of three itself, which is the first thing that we're talking about, which is the first rule of the Sakata 5, has some very interesting things. Now, when we talked about the zigzag, as we just did, which is very, very close to the Elliott wave theory, in which we have our first wave, small retracement, second wave, third wave, and then we have three following waves down, the A, the B, and the C. Is almost identical to, or very similar to, Elliott wave theory. In the same way, some of the variations of those moves up and down, as you can see on illustration 2.1, is the head and shoulders top. In illustration 2.2 is the double top, and 2.3 is the single mountain top. The Japanese are unique in that their language, unlike ours, is composed of characters called kanji. We use letters that form an alphabet, and the letter F doesn't really signify anything to us. The letter A doesn't signify anything. It's alpha, or the first, but there isn't a word picture that one illustrates with that. The Japanese language is such that there is in every word a kanji, a character or picture that is derived from that. And it is that picture that actually illustrates or photographs something within ourselves. Now, he's got here today. Okay, starting again. We're looking at our second chart, 2-1, 2-2, and 2-3. And these are head and shoulders tops, our double tops, and our single mountain tops. On illustration 2.4, 2.5, and 2.6, we see the head and shoulders bottoms, the double bottom, and single bottom. Now, one thing that you realize is that even the Japanese in this particular case are not accounting for the body itself. Now, what we want to talk about are some very simple candlestick patterns that you, when you go out of here and are actually trading within your own house or office, can take some of this information, some of this knowledge, and begin to utilize it in your day-to-day market analysis. Regardless of the computer programs that you use to chart the markets, whether you do graphs by hand, you can create a candlestick chart. Do many of you have candlestick charts available to you? On, I would say about 80%. So that what we found is that, and this was the reason that I got so fascinated in candlestick analysis itself, is that although many people had candlestick charts on their systems themselves, very few people knew what to do with them nor what they meant. In fact, that's one of the ways that I got a start. I used to use a system called FutureSource. And FutureSource in the late 80s and early 90s would have candlestick charts, and for the life of me, I would not have a clue or an understanding of what these charts were actually saying, what they were trying to say to me. And I found that there were particular patterns, and these patterns themselves could tell me what, if anything, was the psychological market sentiment, what mathematically these were trying to convey. The first pattern that we're going to look at is a Three River Evening Star. It's a simple three-day pattern where each one represents a day, but let me go into some of the mechanics of it and what it means. If you notice, we have not the, and I'm going to go right back to our first illustration, so that we can gain just, put it up the right way, so that we can go back and talk about this. And once again, we're going to one eye through six eye, which is our very first thing. As you can see in a bar chart, I talked about the relationship between the open and close and the fact that we have full bodies and empty bodies. Now, obviously, in many cases, there is a range of trading above the top of the body and below the bottom of the body. These in candlesticks are what we call wicks, the upper shadow or the lower shadow. And they represent that trading range for the day on the high and low. But as you can see, in many cases, we have omitted those wicks or upper shadows or lower shadows because, as I said from the beginning of our lecture, that the emphasis which is placed in candlesticks is not based upon a closing price relating to a closing price, the high to the low, but rather the open to close of each session. So that although what you're seeing here have no wicks or upper or lower shadows, in real trading you will find these wicks in almost every circumstance. But it is not the wick which is going to determine whether or not the pattern is pure. If a market, and we're looking at 2.7, if a market's been moving in an uptrend, higher, 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 and then we get a white candle, long in size, and when I say long, we're simply comparing the body size to the average range, and then on the following cycle, it opens above that entire body. Now realize, we could have a wick right in there, if we could draw it, which would go into the body, but that wouldn't be what's important. But the entire open and closing range is above that. We call that a star. And what makes it a star is the fact that the entire range, the open and closing range, is all above that area. Now, as I said, you could actually have a wick that would go into the body of the prior range. And that's not what we're looking at. What we're looking at is actually the body size itself. Now, on the following day, we have the market open up roughly in the same area that it's closed at the prior session before, and close into the range of that first candle on a three-day session, leaving this one small bodied candle in the center. That is a sign that the market is imminently turning around. And in fact, when you find a pure three river evening star, the market's been in a defined uptrend, you get a white candle, you get this big gap above it, and then it closes down. I would say, according to our research, you've got about a 70 to 85% likelihood that that is the absolute top of the market. That can be an interim top, it can be a short-term top, it can be a long-term top, it can be a historical top. But when you see this formation, and it is the frequency of occurrence from the research that we've done, is you will find that in terms of patterns. We scanned a particular market for an article in which we're doing for Futures Magazine for their January issue. We scanned a market for 5 years of data, and we found five occurrences, roughly once a year. Now, in that each year, we found an average of 248 patterns. You're talking about a pattern which has a frequency of occurrence of under 1%. Does not happen that often in the marketplace. But if you're aware of that particular pattern and you can find that pattern, and that pattern meets the following criteria, that is certainly something for you to look at. Now, does that mean that any time we find a Three River Evening Star or Three River Morning Stars, we'll talk about in a second, that we should just go in and sell that market short? Obviously not. The technique that we're talking about, Japanese candlesticks, is such that we need to combine it with all of the Western technical approaches that we have. And that's the beauty of what we're going to see in this lecture. And that is that we are not asking anyone to simply throw out all of the techniques and the tools that you've been using year after year. Continue to use these tools. Continue to work with these tools. These tools that have given you valid insight and have helped you become a successful trader are tools that you obviously need to continue to use. What we are suggesting, though, is that we might have an additional tool that we can offer you, and that tool can gain insight. And let's take, for example, that a market's been moving up. Obviously, we would probably have our stochastic oscillator fairly high. It would probably be trading over our moving averages, and many of the Western oscillators would tell us that what? That this market is overbought. Once we saw this particular formation of a black candle, the interesting thing is the stochastic oscillator, the percent K, is probably not crossed yet. It's probably not moved over, it's probably not closed below the moving average. The CCI and the MACD, although, would probably begin to show its divergence, and then convergence as it moved back down, wouldn't be signaling something, which brings me to a very interesting point. And that is why I became fascinated with candlesticks and what I believe candlesticks can offer you that no other Western technical indicator aside from Fibonacci retracement can offer you. And that is that most Western technicals are based upon averages. Any Western indicator that's based upon averages has to do what? It has to be a lagging indicator. You see, as a market moves from $1 to $2, each time it moves up, and we compare it against any average-based indicator, and an oscillator, although it doesn't use averages, does compare current close to highest high and lowest low, cannot tell us that a market's about to move down. Now, once the market hits the top and then begins to move down, all these Western technical indicators click in and they say, I told you so. But in all actuality, they could not have predicted the top until it hit the top and began to move down. And that's why we call it a lagging indicator. It tells you that a top was in place after the top has been hit. The psychological sentiment that takes place at the top of the market is real. And there are ways to determine that that psychological reversal is imminent. And there are two ways in candlestick technical analysis. The first one is a star, which is a small-bodied candle which gaps above the prior body of the candle that just preceded it. The second type is what we'll call a doji. A doji, as we showed you on the first illustration, is simply a scenario in which the open and the close are identical, as seen in the first chart, 1I. Now, one thing interesting that you might notice is that the doji is the only character on a candlestick chart and a bar chart that are what? They're identical. But what does the doji do for us that's different? Well, first of all, the Japanese had a unique understanding of market psychology that I think that us as Western counterparts have not been able to grasp. And that is, when a market moves up, as it's moving up, Paul Volcker said it best, trees do not grow to the sky. They never have and they never will. He was talking about interest rates. They were saying, well, how high can interest rates go? And he goes, well, trees don't grow to the sky. Never have, never will. There are absolute tops and bottoms to most anything, with exception of our stock market. And I'll go into that towards the end of the seminar. And that is to say that in a commodity, there is an absolute value that we're going to give it. That value is going to change over time, but I don't think there'll ever be a point where people pay you to haul away their gold. I don't think that's going to happen. So let's say, for example, that gold should never have a negative value. I don't think that gold will ever have a value of zero. Intrinsically, we can use it in technology. It's desirable in jewelry. Let's take wheat, for example. I don't think there's ever going to come a point when people will pay you to haul away the farmer's wheat. So we'll probably never see a negative value to the wheat market. Now, will it ever reach zero? As long as people eat, it's going to be desired. People like to live, and to live we eat. Now, so we have a lower level absolute value in a commodity. Let's just say it's zero. We know that most commodities are going to trade above that zero because if it has value, people are going to pay for it. So we'll take the lower level spectrum, zero. Now, as price changes and moves up, we realize that there's some sort of absolute top value. And that is to say that $1 or $2 or $3 a bushel will find a trading range. But there's going to come a point when it's simply too expensive. People will either go to another grain, they'll use a different commodity. So that what we find is that there's always going to be an absolute trading range that a market tends, or price tends to hang in as it moves over time. And as the market moves up, we're trying to discern or diagnose at what point will the public perceive that the price of this commodity is too high. The perfect example of that is the doji. For those of you who have candlestick charts or have systems which look at charts through candlesticks themselves, whenever you see a doji, I highly recommend that you look very, very closely, because what a doji represents is a market which is consolidating. And it is that consolidation which is saying that there's uncertainty in that price movement. And we're going to talk about that in detail later on. The upside gaps to crows, which is 2-8 for our illustration here, it's a scenario, and realize that all of these uptrends here for 2.7, 2.8, 2.9, 2.10 are all contingent upon the market having been in an uptrend. If the market is not in an uptrend, these patterns do not apply. But here is a scenario in which the market moves higher, we get a lower closing day, but it is a star formation which is gapped above the prior session, and then on the following cycle, we get a close that's really at or near the close or the close of the first session. And this upside gap to close, once we have it follow through and fill the gap, as the Western technician would say, we should be in a defined downtrend. Now, example 2-9, which is a evening southern cross, is that doji that I'm talking about. Here's that perfect doji. Now, notice the tail goes right at or into the body, and that's irrelevant. It is a variation off the Three River Evening Star. It is a pattern which is as follows. As the market begins to move up, you get a large white body candle. You get the market opening above the entire range of the body. It makes a higher high on the day, and we look for contract highs in commodities, yearly highs in stocks, and it makes a low that goes into either the body or the tail, and it looks like a cross to us. On the following or the third day, you get a open which is right within the close of that first candle, and it closes at or below the open. This pattern, in terms of frequency of occurrence, is about 1 out of 4,000. In other words, we have a computer program which has 1,300 patterns within it, and when we scan historical databases, for every pattern we find, it takes us about 4,000 patterns before we find this particular pattern. This is one of the most rare patterns you'll find, which is the evening southern cross. But out of the 4,000 occurrences, I have found it to be accurate 96% of the time. And that says a lot to me. What that's saying to me is that although we do not see it that often, when we do see this pattern and it does meet the criteria, we have a very high likelihood that this pattern is signifying the top of the market. Now, the two crows that we see in 210 is a very similar pattern to the upside gaps to crows. The one big difference in it is that it closes well into and at or below the midpoint. Now, if I was to take the center candle out of 210, we would have a pattern that was known as a dark cloud cover. And that's something that we'll talk about in just a little bit. Now, the opposite of the Three River Evening Star is the Three River Morning Star. And the Three River Morning Star is one in which the market's been in a defined downtrend. You get a candle which is a large black body candle, meaning that there's a large daily range, that the market itself closed below the open. On the following session, it opens well below it. It closes well below the body, and that's what's important. As you can see, all of this is below, and realize that these are just templates or examples. And then on the following cycle, it opens above the entire trading range of that candle and closes above or at the opening of the prior session. One variation of the Three River Evenings is what's called a unique Three River Bottom. I've been studying this for 8 years, and to this point I still have yet to figure out how this predicts market bottoms. The occurrence rate is about 1 out of 5,500 patterns found, and the percentage of correctness is between 86 and 88%. So it's a devastatingly accurate pattern. And some of the patterns, we can easily tell you how they work and why they work. On that one, I still to this point after 8 years don't have a clue. But what I do know is that when I see it and follow it, historically speaking, it works. We're going to talk about a couple of things that are called parallel lines and gaps. And the first thing that I want to do is to talk to you about what we call confirmations on every single pattern. And that is, we're going to show you a couple of two-day patterns, but we want you to realize that there are certain groups. Confirmation patterns are created after an initial candlestick pattern is formed, such as the Three River Evening Star, Three River Morning Star. The confirmation pattern is considered to be a conservative trader's entry point. They identify that the initial candlestick pattern now has a higher likelihood of prompting a market's price move in the direction predicted. Confirmation patterns are an essential part of trading with candlesticks. Let me give you the confirming rules. Rule for confirmation of a bullish pattern is as follows. The following candle, the candle which is found right after a bullish pattern, has got to have three criteria which have to be met. The first criteria is it must be a white candle. It must have a higher close as compared to the open. It's essential. The second criteria is it must have a higher high. And the third criteria is it must have a higher low. So confirmation is essential. Now, once we receive a confirming candle and we believe, in other words, the market's been in a downtrend, we got a Three River Morning Star. The following day we had a white candle, had a higher high and a higher low, and it was a white candle. Then we go into what we call continuation. And the continuation patterns are created after an initial candlestick pattern has formed, and normally it appears after the confirmation. Now, the continuation patterns are used to identify a trading market and to maintain an awareness of trend strength. Many times the continuation patterns will form during the individual three-level fluctuation, which is the Elliott wave patterns that we talked about. The price does not move straight up or straight down. Rather, it zigzags to the up and it zigzags to the down. And it's these continuation patterns which are generally helpful to keep you long or short during a defined market trend after the initial candlestick buy or sell pattern. The third type of pattern that we're going to be talking about is a combination pattern. A combination pattern is simply when you find more than one pattern that agree with each other, and we're going to show you specific examples. One example, as we say in our literature here, is that a hanging man and a doji line that are found near a ceiling. It's a strong indication of a potential bearish move. Combination patterns are not all that rare. They appear generally in all stocks and commodities, and the key to these unique patterns is to be able to identify them as a stronger influence to a possible future price move and to help you identify the direction of a move. The third type of indicator that we're going to look at, or pattern, is what we call confluence. Confluence simply means it agrees with. A confluence pattern is composed of a number of technical indicators. That is to say that when we are looking at a market which has been moving up and we look at a stochastic indicator, the first thing we're probably going to see is that market is overbought, that it's trading above the moving averages, that the RSI is at a certain point. Now, if all of those factors are there, and then we get a reversal signal that says that a bearish reversal is imminent, we call that confluence or agreement. Because obviously we're not trying to sell the bottoms and buy the tops, we're trying to buy the bottoms and sell the tops. So that when a market is overbought, that's when we're looking for a sell signal in candlestick patterns. So it is confluence that becomes very important. As it says in text, generally, all Western technical oscillators can be used as confluence patterns. And the key is to understand the relationship between the price movement of the chart, the relative change in the Western technical oscillator, and the candlestick patterns that they form. Now, this could be considered to be part of the saccadic constitution as its underlying concept, although this is more a fundamental reality of profitable trading than a concept. We're going on to figure three right now, and these are what we call gaps. And one thing, before we do that, I want to go a little bit more into the Cicada 5. Before we go to that, I'm going to backtrack a little bit and give you a little bit of history of the Cicada Constitution and the Cicada 5 method itself. And then I want to break down the types that there are so that as we look at these patterns, you have a little bit of history to work with. Now, Hunnema, he was actually born back, it says, in 1716 to 1803 in the city of Cicada. That's obviously where the Cicada 5 comes from. And during this period, this particular gentleman was not a poor man at all. As a matter of fact, his family owned a majority of the rice field. And what Hunnema concentrated on was he had a lot of attention that he gave to the cash rice market and later on the popular fixed rice market. And he detailed attention to markets and his understanding of candlesticks propelled him to gain some understandings. He would study the weather, supply and demand, location of where the fields and the rice were, and a lot of other factors. And in fact, it was said that he had made 100 profitable trades in a row. I don't think there's a Western counterpart trader in the world who can make the claim to have made 100 consistent profit in a row. And in fact, he was so highly regarded in his trading expertise that he was given the title of samurai. Now, the Cicada 5 method, it originates from rules and methods that he developed to trade, and he started with what he called the Cicada Constitution. And at the time, the candlestick chart had not yet evolved, and it wasn't incorporated into his technique, and later on, he began using the candlestick chart. And this was developed by fusing the Cicada Constitution with advanced techniques of the candlestick chart. And his secret methods were divided into two groups and have been passed down through generation to generation. And they're written down in two books, and these two books are actually available. You have to read Japanese to understand it, but they are still available, Cicada Strategies and The Markets Samai no Dan. And the interesting thing is I read these to this day, and I have some very... very funny things with it. His first one, and this is his strategy of what I'll call risk control. Without being greedy, think about the time and price ratio by looking at past price movements. So his first thing was that when ascertaining where the price of a given commodity is today, what we need to do is to ascertain where it's been in the past. Is it closer to the bottom? Is it closer to the top? Is it trading within a mid-range? In other words, to take price and to put it into perspective of history. I love rule number two, attempt to sell at the top and buy at the bottom. That's a hard one. Rule three is quite interesting. Now, these are exact translations from Japanese, so we have to take out of the archaic and try to take these concepts and develop them to today's trading, obviously. But one should increase one's position after a rise of 100 bags from the bottom and a fall of 100 bags from the top. And the sentence at the end is something that we added. Does that sound similar to scaling in and scaling out of a market? In other words, he took his profits and he used those with them. If one forecasts the market incorrectly, one should attempt to identify the error as soon as possible. As soon as the error is discovered, one should liquidate one's position and rest on the sidelines for 40 to 50 days. Do we have any kind of counterpart to that now? Could we maybe call it a stop loss? We're talking about a person who scale bought, had stop losses. Rule number five of the Cicada Constitution talks about liquidation. And it says that one should liquidate 70 to 80% of one's profitable positions, liquidating the remainder after changing direction once the price has reached the ceiling or the bottom. In other words, don't be too greedy. Larry Williams, in a speech once, said he had developed an indicator that he couldn't really teach anyone on pencil or paper, but if you can relate to it, it's probably the single most indicator he will ever be able to convey to you. He called it the greed factor. And I'm going to try to paraphrase it for you now. And that is, how many of us have been in a trade and the market's moving in our direction? We bought gold, let's say 380. I'm not a big gold trader, but let's say we bought gold at 380 and it's at 390. We've got $10 on the trade, that's 391. The market's opened up, it's moving higher, we're all excited. We'll call up a broker and we go, let's hold off on that sell. Let's just let it get to 393. 393, we're going to sell out. And how many times has it been the absolute top at 391? There's that point when you get so greedy, it's usually the very top or the very bottom of the market. And the fact that one should liquidate 70 to 80% of one's profitable position, in other words, when it's made its expected move, liquidate most of it. And as you can see, that these techniques that we're talking about are really money management techniques. The techniques that the top institutional, professional, and individual traders, the successful ones, are using today. So with this in mind, we have the Cicada Constitution. From the Cicada Constitution, we then get four more cicada set of patterns. And that's where we get the idea of the Cicada 5. And these sets of patterns are as follows. The first set, we're going to illustrate this by example on our next set of sheets, that is Sanku, which is three gaps. The three gaps patterns consist of three individual gaps in prices that occur after a defined trend. The gaps do not need to be consecutive. They may form throughout many days of trading. This pattern signifies that the market has continued its defined trend and current trend may soon end. The three gaps pattern can form either a bullish or bearish trend to identify specific trend reversals. Remember that this pattern has a specific correlation to the three-level fluctuation theory, which is once again what we call the Elliott Wave Theory. And let me give you an example of this. We're going to go to illustration three right now. And here is our example right here of three upside gaps and three downside gaps. Now here's the beauty of it. This is where you see it on 3A and 3B. 3A is consistent. The gap is a price void, of course. The Japanese call it a window. 1, 2, and 3. Now let me ask you something. If you were trading a given commodity, the commodity opened at $1, closed at $1.50. Opened the next day at $1.75, closed at $2.25. Gapped open the next day from $2.25 to $2.50 and closed at $3.50. Then it closed at $3.50, it opens the next day at $3.75 and closes at $4.50. Would you say that's bullish or bearish? Those who say it's bullish, raise their hand, please. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. It's a bearish exhaustion signal. This actually is a bearish exhaustion signal. And that's why we have this arrow going down here. The Japanese believe, and you can see this in charts and in price activity, we can show you an actual example. I've got it in the computer over at our stand over by the front. But whenever you get a market which has had three price voids or three gaps, 84% of the time it has exhausted itself. This was probably the single most difficult pattern for me to understand. That a price which is just out and out skyrocketing could actually be construed as a bearish indicator. Now this is the same scenario in which it's not consecutive days. You've had it down, up, down day, but here's window one right here. Window two is right here. Window three is right here. The Japanese believe that at this point, we're going to get a downtrend. The reciprocal strings, you can see example B. An example B is three down gaps in which markets gaps, they expect it to move up. Excuse me? These absolutely do require confirmation. Now, for the confirming candle, what we're going to look for to happen, that's a very good point, is that let's take the three upside gaps. You would want to have a black candle with a lower low and a lower high. And typically, we want to do the same thing the Western technicians say look for, to fill the gap. It's all nullified, that is correct. It does not have to be, you have to fill the gap, it could happen in 2 or 3 days. It does not have to happen, just in the same way that you don't have to have the consecutive move up or the consecutive move down, you would have to get confirmation before you actually took the exhaustion pattern. No, in a single 2-day or 3-day pattern, confirmation has to happen the very next day. If you have a dark cloud cover or an engulfing bullish or an engulfing bearish, which we'll go over, the very next day you would have to have that confirmation happen. You wouldn't, if it didn't happen on the next day, the whole pattern's nullified. The next, the next three gaps, and remember, we're talking about the most original patterns. As I said, our system has about 1,350 patterns, so there's quite a few patterns in candlestick methodology. We're going over the most rare and archaic patterns, the ones that really all of these patterns were developed from, and that's known as three gaps. The next thing is Senpai, which stands for three parallel lines. It's classic formation, and it's really what we call a continuation pattern. These patterns occur most frequently when the market has already had some sort of a reversal pattern. If the market's been moving down, we had a reversal pattern to the upside, we received a confirming candle, now it begins to go up, and we get particular patterns that say, yes, in fact, it's going to continue along the same line. And so three parallel lines is one of it. There's a couple of variations of three white soldiers and three crows. Those are the most common of the two. Three parallel lines, white three-line advanced block, three white soldiers, which is what it differs from. And let me give you a couple of examples of that and show that to you right now. In example three, as you can see here, in example 3C, we have the three white soldiers. The only definition of that is the market spirit, it was in a defined downtrend, it did reverse, it's begun to move in an uptrend. We've got 3 days in a row that have a succession of higher highs, a succession of higher lows, and it must open within the prior body on each day. Each day. And you will see this. This is probably one of the single most common candlestick patterns that we'll find in a market that's moving up or down in terms of frequency of occurrence. It occurs, let's say, out of 100 patterns in which we find in a market which is trending, it will occur roughly 40 to 60% of the time. They are very, very common patterns. The three crows is just the opposite, and that is the market has been in a defined downtrend, and you get a series of lower lows, lower closes as compared to the lows, and it just continues to move down. Boom, boom, boom. No, no, no. These are, okay, on illustration number three, example D, the three crows itself is a bearish continuation pattern. So this happens when the market's in a defined downtrend. Now, the reason we're not looking for exhaustion is there's no gaps. It's the gaps that the Japanese believe will create that exhaustion pattern itself. This is a variation. This is a white three-line advanced block. And what happens is you're typically looking on the three white soldiers for each of these white bodies to get larger in size or be the same size. Now, in this case, the illustration I actually would have liked to have been, well, I can draw on this thing since I did it originally. I'd like this actually to be a little bit smaller. And the reason being, if you can all see that, I know it doesn't look it, I should have brought my black pen, but what I'm trying to do is show that on each day, the range itself got smaller and smaller and smaller. So you had a large white candle on the following day, it met the criteria, it opened in the midpoint and closed above it, but the range was smaller. And then on the following day, it opened and closed at it or above it, and so the range was smaller. And the last variation of that is the three white line sign deliberation, in which you can have a gap or no gap, but that very, and this is example after illustration three, that very last one is a star. In other words, it gaps above it, and if you get your confirming candle, this is where you'll see multiple candlestick patterns form. If it opens above it here, in example F, and then closes below it, you get an engulfing pattern. That engulfing pattern confirms the three-line sign deliberation, and this is a very significant pattern. I've seen this occur in pretty good frequency, but more importantly, it really seems to pan out. It really seems to be a good profitable trade. These are other variations of the parallel lines that we're talking about. The Bossi three ring as well as the simultaneous three rings. These are examples in which you have lower closes, lower lows, lower closes, lower lows, lower closes, lower lows. However, in one case, you get a small gap, and then they trade within the range. In this one, it's consistent with simultaneous three rings, is every close is the open for the next session. The close is the open for the next session. And this is a very strong indicator that the market is going to continue bearishly to the downside. And that's the parallel lines that we talked about and the variations. Now, we talked about a little bit about the three mountains. And the three mountains in the Cicada 5 is very, very important. And the one thing that you have to realize is that these are very long candlestick patterns. In other words, we're not looking for the occurrence to take place overnight. And if we go back to our illustrations 2.1 through 2.6, we're going to go back and look. These are the three mountains that we talked about right in here and right in here. And the interesting thing that you're seeing is that it is analogous to the head and shoulders bottom. Now, the three mountains consist of two groups, each with three individual shapes or market tops and bottom formations. Now, these groups directly correlate to the three-level fluctuation theory that we've been talking about. The three mountain patterns is very similar to the Western head and shoulders top. They both consist of the very same price movement and characteristics. Japanese also consider the double top and the rounded top as variations of the three mountain group. And once again, the rounded top and the double top, we'll just show you again. A double top here, top one, top two, a rounded top, a rounded bottom, a double bottom, and then of course our head and shoulders here, inverted head and shoulders, or head and shoulders with somebody standing upside down. And that's the three mountains. Now the Japanese view these patterns from a broader perspective. These patterns are attuned to identifying major reversals of the trend over a long frame of time. As I said, that these candlestick patterns will vary anywhere between 2 and 4 days or 4 candles. But when you start to talk about the mountain tops and the mountain bottoms, we are genuinely talking about patterns that can take 30, 60, or 90 days in length. These are long-term perspectives in charts. Now, the next thing we're going to talk about is three rivers. And the three rivers patterns reflect a complete reversal of direction. They form either in the morning or evening position with many variations. The three river morning star pattern reflects a bullish reversal of trend or a possible market bottom, whereas the three river evening star reflects a bearish reversal of trend or possible market top. The common formations, as shown in Figure 3, and we're going to go back and look at those in a little second, consist of very strong daisy or single-type candles such as daisies, bazes, or marabazi lines. These individual candle types represent some of the strongest single candle types to identify price direction or lack of it. For example, the daisy line that separates the two candles within this pattern identifies that the market is unable to continue the current trend. The third candle that completes this pattern confirms the fact that the market has reversed. And we talked about some of the variations of that, which were examples 2-7 through 2-12. Especially 2-7, showing us the Three River evening, and then 2-11, showing us the Three River morning. And that's the Three River patterns. The last of the three is what we call the three methods, the rising three and the falling three. Now, they're related to one's position in the markets. And that's to say that a market will not move straight up or straight down. And it really is a pause in the markets. As many times we'll witness a market which begins to move up, takes what we call it a retracement, and then we'll move up again. Now, these two patterns are the rising three methods and the falling three methods. If the rising three methods appears in a rising market, one should expect a short rest before a further climb in price. The opposite is true for the falling three. If it appears in a declining market, one should expect a short break before a further fall. All this is, once again, is it's an actual pattern which is attempting to forecast the way the price activity will normally work. And that's what really makes it so fascinating. And this is all found in example 4, the rising three and the falling three. I have seen variations where there are 4 or 5. Typically for the Japanese, there can't be 4. 4 means death. So any pattern that has 4 in there, they're going to disregard, even if it is true. Well, when you say, you mean, does each one of these have to represent a day? Could you have this one up here? No. Then it would not fall within that pattern group. Now, there are variations, but this is the rising three and the falling three methods are very, very stringent, and they have to follow absolutely. Now, I have seen indications, and I have identified patterns through a fuzzy logic in our computer, where you'll only get 2 days in between these two white lines, or two white lines in between those two black lines, and I find them to have the same validity, and more importantly, the same probability of success. You mean, does it have to close above? Okay, on the following three, does it have to close below it? Yes. Correct, it has to be an outside day. For it to be an exact replica of the pattern. Now, if you see a variation of the pattern that's close, use that to gain insight. Yes? Absolutely. Good point. Shadows could be anywhere. There could be a shadow that's all the way down here. There could be shadows that move above and below it. The shadows can be placed anywhere. The fact that they're placing the importance between the open and closing range and the prior open and closing range, the wicks in this case are totally irrelevant and could be placed anywhere, and it would still be an exact duplicate of that particular pattern, yes. Yes, I have. There are some patterns that actually do incorporate shadows themselves. One of them is tweezer tops and tweezer bottoms. Tweezer tops is simply where you have 2 consecutive days that have identical highs, or you have 3 days where you have a high of a dollar, then a high of 98, and then a high of a dollar. So you've got, it's sandwiched in between, but you have consecutive highs. Matching lows is simply 2 black candles that have equal lows. tweezer bottoms are equal lows. Tweezer tops and bottoms are ones in which you have two candles that have identical tops and bottoms, and it is in your data service repeating the prior day. Yeah. There are a couple of patterns that do look at what we call the wicks. But as a rule of thumb, that's only maybe 10% of the pattern groups. Because the Japanese do not feel that is simply people trading within a trading range, and they look at that as unloading of positions and the extremes. See, to them, the reason that they're placing emphasis on the open and close is that it gives you an indication of who ultimately gained control of that trading session. If it closes above the open, the bulls have control. If it closes below it, the bears have control. And so that's why they place so much importance in that. Now, an abandoned baby is a pattern in which the highs are very, very important. If I can find that, I can find something very, very close to it, which is the evening Southern Cross. If this low is above everything, the high of both prior session, or both the session before it and the session after it, we call that an abandoned baby rather than an evening Southern Cross. And so there's another pattern that actually accounts for it. About 5% of the patterns do take into account the actual high and lows. What they're more doing is taking into account midpoint of the body. For example, a piercing line has to close at or above the midpoint. A dark cloud cover pattern has to close below the midpoint or at the midpoint. Right, the first one. Next thing we're going to do is talk about some upside down daisies. Inside out, upside down. We must be getting near the close, huh? Okay. One thing that we found in our research is that when you're looking at a candlestick chart, in many cases, prior to the exhaustion of a trend or reversal of a trend, we get a significant candle, and that candle is a daisy. A daisy is simply defined as a scenario in which the open and the close are identical. And I started to describe some of the reasons that we found that daisies are so darn important. The way that I tend to describe a daisy is as follows. And that is, if the market's going from point A to point B, and then it's going to turn around and come back and move the other way, and it's running 90 miles an hour down the track, just chugging, 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 and it gets to that station. We know when it gets to that station, it's going to end up going the other way. Before it goes the other way, what does it have to do? Stop. A doji is a stop sign. A doji says that neither the bulls nor the bears were able to have ultimate control of the market. If you gain nothing from this two-hour seminar except one fact, please let it be the fact that whenever you see the open and close in any market, in any cycle, whether it's intraday, daily, weekly, or monthly, whenever the open and close are identical, pay significant attention to it. If that's all we can retain, that one piece of information, I promise you, will gain you insight into the market that you previously didn't have. I promise you that. In almost every occasion when you look at a market which is moving to the top, what you're going to see is an acceleration of momentum, and that momentum acceleration is usually going to be visually described as on an uptrend as the white candles getting larger. When the white candles stop getting larger and the range begins to get reduced, what's happening? Momentum is starting to shift. It's starting to get lost in the marketplace. When momentum is so subtle and so lost that neither the bulls nor the bears have control, it's the stop sign. It hasn't reversed. Sucker's going down the track 90 miles an hour. It has to stop before it turns around, goes back down the track the other way. And visually, that daisy is going to tell you that the market has stopped. It's consolidated. There is no ability for it to happen. Now, it usually isn't at absolutely the top or the bottom, but for example, and here we've got a soybean chart, you can purposely see we've left price out of the equation, we've left time out of the equation. Reason being is because time and price are not as important as the candlesticks themselves. But here we had a market trading in a very narrowly defined range. It was kind of to the upside, but this is what I would call a very choppy market right in here, as we look at the doji example. But when we got that pure doji right here, which is number A on the soybean chart, 1, 2, 3 days later, boom, that market really came down hard. This is almost a pure doji. Example B, and the market dropped down pretty hard. And then here C, we didn't show you, but what happened is the market did move back to the upside, right in there. And that is something that's very important. Whenever you see that doji, it's so darn important that you really pay close attention to it. Let me go back to... I'm sorry, we're back on the example. Why did this market move back up here, you mean? Are you saying down by part C? Well, what was happening was this. The market was in a narrowly defined range, but here we had a small uptrend. Then we had alternating candles. We had black, 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 white, doji, white, doji, black. The market began to consolidate. The ranges weren't increasing, they were decreasing. The body size was getting smaller. Fundamentally, there was a reason that that market went down. But as a technician, I'm not looking at the fundamentals behind it. Whenever I see a defined narrowing in range, I look for a consolidation, and when I see that consolidation, I look for a major move in the market. Does that answer?
He's saying, can you predict which direction that move is?
Not from just the doji itself. Not in this particular case, no. No, you could not.
How many bars do you get for the
doji at all? I will normally give it 3 to 5 bars. But what I have seen in most cases is the dojis will tend to be the absolute tops and bottoms of the market, or clustering within the top 3% of that range, or the bottom 3% of that range. Yes.
That
is correct. This could be an intraday chart, a daily chart, a weekly, or a monthly, although I don't know anyone that trades off a monthly or a weekly. I look at weeklies for historical highs and contract highs. Except for one thing. Actually, in a weekly chart, I find it more significant than a daily chart. Reason being is it tells me if a market opens at $1 on Monday and trades as high as $3 and as low, well, let's say it opens at $5 on Monday and trades as high as $8 and as low as $3, but it still ends up closing at $5 again. That tells me that although they were able to push up some highs and push up some lows, the net result of the week was nothing. Neither the bulls nor the bears had ultimate control in that time frame. So I find it important. What dojis will fool you is if you go into a very thinly traded market, and in that thinly traded market, you're using a 5-minute bar, and it opens at a price and closes at the same price, it's because there were no trades done. That's where they're irrelevant. For example, in an S&P, you could get a beautiful 3 and 5 minute chart. You go into, for example, well, the grains have been moving lately, but you go into some of the softs like cotton or cocoa. You look at a 10-minute chart, you get almost all dojis. Those do not have significance. You had a question?
No.
Okay. Yes. It wasn't a gravestone doji. Okay. First of all, the definition of a gravestone doji is a tombo doji, which looks like, I don't know how well anyone can see this. Let me move this up. A gravestone doji, and we're going to take a second before I finish that.
Doji. The definition of a gravestone doji is one in which the open, low, and close are identical. Now, we have found, we use fuzzy logic in our computer. The program that we developed is called the Candlestick Forecaster. I've been programming on it for going on 6 years, and what I found is that typically the absolute definition of a doji is where the open and close are identical. I found that in practicality that's not always the case. If the open and close are a tick to two ticks apart, it can still be a doji. We don't call it a pure doji, but it is a doji nonetheless. Now, a gravestone doji, according to Steve Nissan, its fortes are in calling tops. But I have seen very good gravestone dojis at the bottom of a market also. So if your question is, how do you know that it's a gravestone? That would be where the open and close and low are right around the same place, even if it's one tick apart. Even if, for this example, you had a small tail, a very, very small wick at the bottom, that would still signify a gravestone doji. Maybe not in the purest sense, but in the analytical sense, in the ability for it to forecast price movement, you could, in fact, draw that inference. Okay, if a market is, first of all, if a market is limit up or limit down, we go into a completely different scenario. A market that opens limit up is going to form what's called a, if anyone can see it, it's just a straight horizontal line across. It's called a four-price doji. Open, low, high, and close are all identical. That's what you'll always see in market opens up, limit up, limit up, limit up. You're going to get four-price dojis all the time. Now then, if at some point in the trading day it comes off a limit, it doesn't lack limit, then you'll see some sort of doji forming. But that's called a four-price doji. Four-price doji in a limit market does not have the same significance either, because it is not showing the typical consolidation or uncertainty in the market, because if it's limit up, the bulls are obviously in control. There's no doubt about it. There's no consolidation. There's no uncertainty. If it opens up the next day, limit up, there's no uncertainty. Who's in control on a limit up move? The bulls. I mean, I'd hate to be short. It's got to be the bulls. So that's a very valid point. The four-price doji is actually an instance in where you would not, the four-price doji during a limit move, you would not follow the same guidelines that you would at a normal doji. Because the reason that the market is not trading higher or lower is because the exchange has put restrictions on trading activity. It's because they put restrictions on it is what's causing the price to remain at that absolute value, and because it's at that absolute value, it is certainly not consolidating. It is certainly not unsure. It's only unsure if the market moves off of that limit move. Were there any other questions? Now we want to get into some fun stuff here. We're going to talk about some actual patterns here. And some of the patterns that we found. And as you notice, I don't put price really, and I do put some time, but I kind of block it out because I don't really want to care what the commodity is and what it's saying. I just want to look at some particular patterns. And we see a series of tops and bottoms. This is figure six that we're looking at in the book. We've got A, B as a top, C as a bottom, D is a top, E is a bottom, and F is a top. This is a genuine chart, and I'm going to not disclose what it is so that none of us have any prejudice as to why we think it should move a certain way. Market moves in a defined uptrend, and we've changed actually these numbers, and we've made them 1 through 4, so there's no idea what it is. We got on example A here a very, very simple pattern, which is called a harami. Harami means pregnant in Japanese. To the Western technician, we would call that an inside trading day. But there's one key difference between an inside trading day and a harami. In the harami, what is important is that the body, the open and close, trades within the body, the open and close of the prior day. In the inside trading day, the high and low have to trade within the high and low of the prior day. So it's a little bit different. But that did turn out to be the top of the market came in. We saw pure doji. It did consolidate down here. This represents, these blank spots here represent weekends. This right here, this white candle here between A and B, and this black candle is going to be an EB, an engulfing bearish. The market does move a little bit higher, and we get to this one particular candle type, example B on figure 6. And that is known as an inverted hammer if it's found at the bottom, but at the top it's called a shooting star. It roughly matches resistance of the high that was made at A, and in fact moves the market all the way down to a much lower range or a lower low. When we got to this point, we had a pattern that's called a piercing line. A piercing line is a pattern in which the market's been in a defined downtrend. The market opens at a certain point. It moves lower during the day. And on the following day, it opens below the prior close. And it closes at or above the midpoint of the prior session. And as you can see, it closes almost near the top of that prior session. It moves up and it trades in a defined trading range, as we can see here. And remember, how did I define uptrends, downtrends, and consolidating areas? If I find alternating candles, I know that it's in a pretty defined area. We've got one white, one black, one white, one black, doji, white, black, gaps up, we get our two dojis, right? Then 2 days later, we get an engulfing bearish pattern, which might answer your question. You see, the dojis will precede a lot of moves, but they will precede them by 2 or 3 days. The market's consolidating. It doesn't really know which way it's going to go. Then you'll find a pattern right after that that signifies that. So you got two pure dojis here, an engulfing bearish, which pushed the market down. You got a series of dojis in this area. There's your pure doji right there. And then an engulfing, actually another piercing line, because it didn't close at the midpoint. It closed above the midpoint, but it didn't close above it. Then you get pretty much a runaway market, where it moved up one white day, two, three, four, five, six. 6 days in a row, inside day with no confirmation, so you disregard it. Seven, and on the eighth day, which is example F, you got a pure doji, and the market began to channel within that range. But the key is at most major tops and bottoms in this, on example A, you had a harami, which was bearish. It's a perfect example of a bearish reversal pattern, an engulfing bullish, which is a perfect example of a bullish reversal pattern, a shooting star on example B, a piercing line on C, an engulfing bearish on D, a piercing line on E, and the doji on F. So that even though that market traded within a very narrowly defined range at almost each top and bottom, there was a simple 1 or 2 day pattern that you could discern. And that's what's so very important, and that is to realize that these patterns that we're showing you are such that they can, in fact, show us some movement. Now, this is a live hog chart, and this is example 8. And the interesting thing that we're going to see is we've added a couple of things to it. We've begun to put some channel lines in there, some trend lines in there. We're looking for highest highs, lowest lows. We're trying to incorporate everything into it. And what you're going to find is that on even these small bottoms, B, C, and D, there are distinguishable patterns or trends. Now, I can't really blow it up. You'll probably see it better in the book because in the actual illustration here, it becomes a little bit blurry. But on example A, we had this beautiful doji that forms within accelerated move to the, I can't even tell if that's a white or black. It should be a white candle as it moved up. Is it, huh? Yeah, it would be hard pressed. If that was black, it would be much more easy to see it open below it. But you had that beautiful doji form right there, which turned out to be the top at what, around 42.6 cents a pound, took it back down to about 40 cents, and channels within a very, very tight range. Example B is going to be a piercing line again. C is that harami. D is going to be an inverted hammer that we see, but they're both falling within it, so it's going to be an inverted hammer as well as harami. Takes it all the way up to E, which I believe is going to be a dark cloud cover or a harami, depending on, it's going to be a harami because it did not open up above that. And as you can see, at each of these particular categories, we get a very, very defined pattern. And to give, I'm going to give you, and this is from example 9. A is also, besides it being that harami cross, you had asked, somebody had asked earlier if there were any patterns which incorporate highs and lows. And one of the ones that it does incorporate is the tweezer tops and bottoms. And this is where we're talking about multiple patterns. Okay, and this is a blow-up of the chart of example A. And it goes, this example illustrates one of the primary benefits of Japanese candlestick approach. The patterns form in combination. For example, when two or more individual candlestick patterns form at the same time, it's showing us that the market is ready to move in the predicted direction. In this case, we find a pattern called the tweezer tops confirmation and a harami white cross confirmation, and then inform us to sell the markets. Both of these candlestick patterns are unique. It just happens that they're formed at the same trading day. The tweezer tops pattern is created when two candles have an exact same high price, and in the following trading day, it's lower than those highs, we would receive the confirmation. The harami white cross pattern, similar to the inside trading day, which is our Western term, and in Japanese means pregnant. It's a common reversal signal. One should always wait for confirmation before trading these signals. Once again, confirmation on this is going to be a black candle with a lower high, with a lower low, and a lower close, and that's as seen as above. Now, I'm going to show you a couple of plates that come from our book that are going to give you a much better illustration of what we're talking about with some of these patterns. And these are not in the book, these are just in conjunction to it, and we'll describe it as we go into our last 10-15 minutes of this. And the first one that we're going to talk about is a hangman. A hangman itself is a very interesting candlestick pattern in which, when the market has been moving in an uptrend, you have a very narrowly defined body, but the tail is at least twice the length of the overall body between open and close. Now, the interesting thing about a hangman is that color is unimportant. A hangman can either be white or black. Color is not important. This comes from a group of candles called the umbrella lines, and it is these umbrella lines that form a hangman, a hammer, an inverted hammer, and a shooting star. Here's our shooting star. We talked a lot about these, about doji stars and Three River Evening and Three River Morning. Realize that they don't have to fall within that variation. Here's some templates of other variations that they can form in. And we talked about combination patterns, so I want to spend just a couple of minutes talking about those. And we showed a pattern called the simultaneous three wings and the bazu three wings and the rising three wings. We wanted to show you in an actual illustration how they can actually begin to form together, how you can see these things in unison. And this is pulled from a chart, but we've just turned it into a plate where the market had been coming down. We got the bazu three wings. It came down. We had three stars in the bottom, but they were all in a triangular shape. And so for that reason, it is called a tri-star bottom. Here's an example of the rising three method, which we talked about before. And the advanced block that we showed you in the last example, although this one is with a hangman. Were there any questions that anybody had? So that when I can call any of you for personal advice at any moment when I can't figure out what a pattern is, right?
If you're not careful where you get your advice, you can't.
Huh?
If
you're not careful where you get your advice, you make.
There we go. That might work. It depends on where the question is, how reliable is five or six candles moving down and then it's followed by a white? Would the white be gapped below the black? In other words, if you have five or six candles coming down, then you have a small white-bodied candle which appears below, which gaps below the last black. We would then call that a star in a morning position. If on the following day you then had a white candle, so here's our example that you're asking me. You've got six candles, right? Boom, 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 boom. And let's say that this candle here is white, right? How important is that? Well, if it's followed by a white candle, what pattern do we have? Three river, morning star. Now, if it was a white candle on the inside, it would be a harami. If it was a white candle let's take a look, okay? Here's our candles coming down, right? We showed you how it could form into harami. That would be this. If we got our confirming candle, it'd be very important. If what happened was you got a series of black candles down, then you had the white candle in the middle, and the following day it had another black candle down, it's just a pause. Nothing confirmed. It began to set itself up, but nothing confirmed. Now, if that white candle, for example, came in and opened below the prior black candle and closed above it, we get an engulfing bullish. If it opens below it and closes at the midpoint, we get a piercing line. So in other words, the Japanese have diagnosed every potential variable that's possible for the movement one way or the other. So the fact that you've got a series of black candles moving down, moving down, moving down, moving down, then a white candle appears, it has to appear either this way, this way, this way, this way. This way, or that way, or that way. There's only so many variations that it can take. If it's a small body candle or a large body candle. Now, if in fact you get all of those variations, how important is it? If you get the confirming variation, the confirming candle is very important. That signifies a reversal. If in fact it does not, then what you're looking at is a continuation in a downtrend. And let me give you an example. This is something we call a thrusting pattern and a double thrusting pattern. If the market has been moving down, and for example right here, do you see where my finger is? Right here? The following day it's a black candle. There was absolutely no confirmation. Then on the next day you get another white candle and it followed down. No confirmation. All you're doing is seeing short covering. All you're doing is seeing positions getting squared up. So until it forms A, an absolute pattern, and B, you receive a confirmation of that pattern, it's not that important. But as soon as it develops into a pattern and then you get the confirmation, if you're short, the first thing I would do if I was short and I began to see these patterns, at very, very least I would tighten my stops. In other words, if the market's moving down and I get this formation here, I would at least tighten my stop to the close or the high of that. So if it makes another high on that following day, I'm out, I've pulled profits. Do I reverse my position? I might reverse my position on the following cycle after confirmation. Or I might sit on the sidelines for a day or two and see how the market wants to react. But it's a very good question. It's critically important. That first white candle isn't so important, but it's what happens on the following subsequent cycles that make it so important.
Another question is, how reliable is the method for stop?
It is incredibly reliable. As long, the question is, how reliable is the candlestick method for stocks? On stocks which have high liquidity or very actively traded stocks, a few of them you can actually use a daily candlestick chart. Most of them will whipsaw you. And what I mean is this. You can get a genuinely valid signal that tells you to buy a stock at $43 and tells you to sell it at $43.75. There's no leverage, unlike commodities. And so it's, unless you're on the floor buying huge blocks of stock, it's unrealistic that you can buy something at 45 and sell it at 40, that you can buy something at $43 and sell it at $43.75 and make a profit, because you've got to account for commissions and things of that nature and slippage, actually, where you get in and where you get out. What we recommend to our customers is that when utilizing the candlestick method in stocks, you use weekly charts only. By using a weekly chart, you usually get a signal that tells you to get in around 43 and out about 51. So if you use it with weekly charts, it will work very good. In fact, I lecture all over the world. I just came back from Amsterdam. I spent a month and a half lecturing all over Asia, and what I found was the research that was being done there amazed me, because the candlestick methods has a universal quality in predicting commodity and stock moves globally. I believe that a technique that works well has to work well everywhere, and a technique that has validity has to have validity across the board, whether it's in commodities or stocks in our markets, whether it's in commodities and stocks in any global market. If it does not work universally well, I don't think the system has true merit. Were there any other questions? Yes?
What time frame do you like when you're
doing your
everyday work?
6 minutes, 6 minutes, or? I'm an oddball. In S&Ps, I use 3, 7, 9, 11, and 13-minute charts. Depending on the liquidity of the market determines my time frame. On a grain, I will not dare look at a chart under 30 minutes. Just won't do it. I like to use 33, 47, 66, and 95. Now you can take that to 30, 60, and 90. I always like to do things just a little bit different, so my signals are generated at a different point than the mass of people using the candlestick technology. I've got 4,000 of our units out, and I know that these 4,000 traders are sometimes trading against me. So I want to use a different time frame than most people use. What markets are you interested in?
I look at them on every market.
Okay.
Gold, silver, S&P.
S&Ps and bonds, because they're such liquid markets, you can go down to as short as a 3 minute. Okay? I would never recommend using anything shorter, although I've got clients that swear by minute charts. That's too short frame. Well, first of all, you brought up two valid points, which in the last 5 minutes I'm never going to be able to cover, but I have one question for you. First off, are you counting the candle which is forming? In other words, you've got a 5 minute chart, and as it ticks, that candle changes, right? Okay. My rule is that I'll look at the candle, but I will not take a call generated until three quarters of that time cycle is up. Reason being is that if it's an engulfing bullish for three quarters of the cycle, there is about a 70 to 85% probability that it'll end up being an engulfing bullish. If you try to take that signal prior to that, most of the times it just kind of ungenerates itself. Your second point is a very interesting point. I wrote an article back in 1993 called Multiple... I don't remember that. It was called Multiple Timetables in the S&P, in which I lay out using multiple sequences. And what I used to do is I developed a series of rules called two in and one out. And simply put, if I use a 3, 5, and a 7 minute chart, 3 minute triggers a buy, disregard it. 5 minute does nothing, 7 minute triggers a buy, I'm in. Anytime any of those time frames, two time frames agree, I take the call. As soon as I get any sell past if it was a 3 and a 7 minute that got me in, then I will take anything, a 7, a 9, 11, or 13, anything in those outer time frames, I get out. I don't know if that helps you at all. But what I found is that you have to wait. On a daily chart, I wait till the last hour of trading before I take the call. And on an intraday chart, I wait till at least three quarters has transpired. I really genuinely want to thank all of you for taking time to come in and to listen to myself speak. It's my hope that you find the wisdom that you seek, because the greatest edge that any trader can have is wisdom, because wisdom leads to knowledge, and knowledge, as far as I'm concerned, is the greatest trading tool in the world. And it's my desire that this technique can help you gain the wisdom that you want, but more importantly, and most importantly, that wisdom allows you to achieve your financial goals. That wisdom allows you to get to where you're really trying to go. I thank you very much for your time today.